Okie dokie. So I don't know if you can read the slide that says the innovation, evolution, revolution. So Jane has been talking about evolution, revolution, and she's been looking at how our outer conditions and circumstances compel us to evolve in order for us to be able to manage what's happening in our world. And so she's been describing this process of climbing a paradigm ladder. With each rung of development, we have a different viewing point, a different context for engaging our life experience. And as we intentionally engage this activity of really opening ourselves to the movement of spirit, there is this mechanism of life that naturally brings us into our next developmental opportunities. This is what we understand as being the intention behind the life force, the activity of life, and so I'm wanting to, in a sense, to create another dimension of that conversation where, as we look at evolution, we're looking at how we move from simple to complex, how we develop into a greater expression or actualization of ourselves, our potential, our capability. However we align ourselves with the principle of evolution, that we know that this is a part of life. I mean, a child grows from adolescence to adulthood, and so it's just a part of things. But if we don't understand that we can actually evolve, for instance, out of a sense of being a victim, we kind of feel like we're sort of stuck in our life. And so, but when we understand that we can actually grow and unfold and transform our life and awaken into a greater sense of empowerment and potential, then it makes sense for us to be interested in how we evolve, how we grow. And the whole idea of the revolution is all about understanding that part of the urgency, the essential nature of us being in these conversations is that the world needs an intentionality around opening to what is unfolding that brings us into a greater potential of co-creating a world that works for everyone. And so in addition to this, I'm going to be talking today, introducing the concept of involution, which is not something that's new to us. Perhaps the word itself, involution, is sometimes a medical term, it's sometimes a mathematical term, but in the context of our spiritual journey, it's about involving ourselves in the dimension of our own being that is independent of what's happening in the outer, but yet is equally an integral component of how we experience our unfolding life in the outer. And so can we not agree that it's important for us to be interested in how we unfold in this awareness of our spiritual identity, our spiritual self? But that's equally important with respect to what's happening in our spiritual journey. And so in a sense, we're looking at a process that Ken Wilber described as waking up, growing up, and then showing up. And if we just think about it for a moment, that part of our empowerment, part of what makes us capable of being able to be present to the craziness that is happening in our world is that we have capacities, we have gifts, we have superpowers, if you will, that live independent and are not eclipsed by the conditions that we face in our world. It's just that we haven't been in the practice of implementing or activating those capacities, those aspects of our own resourcefulness that lay dormant if we don't develop those things. And so part of our effort as a spiritual community is to create a community within which we understand that's the work. So we're not about talking about how to fix and control or, you know, get out of life what we feel is our due, but we're about actually understanding how we co-create our personal reality so we create a world that mirrors what is essentially our truth as opposed to mirroring our sense of separation and our limiting beliefs. So we have a role in playing how our world shows up to us as well as how we are being with it, you see. And so as we come together in these communities, you know, we're just one energetic field of this effort to hold the space for this a world awakening. And so there are other groups just like us that are in this effort. And so that's important for us to value. And so as we look at this three-step dimension of what we're about as spiritual beings, waking up, growing up, showing up, it lines with these principles. Evolution is all about growing up, and showing up is the revolution that we want to be part of. We want to be part of being able to make a difference in our world because it needs us. So involution is not about retreating, but it's really gathering our essence and really resetting ourselves in the context of who and what we've come here to be. We have been sent into this world because of what is occurring in these times. And so as we open to that as a possibility, we find that there's power there with knowing that we've been sent, that we're the one, that we have purpose, that we can make a difference. And in spite of all the crazy things that are happening in the world, to have a sense, a modicum of resourcefulness and empowerment that gives us a sense that we can individually, in and of our own effort, manage to make a difference that improves things for everyone, it is worthy of our effort to be in this intent, this conversation. Okay, so there's involution is about waking up. So I'm going to be talking about the aspect of our journey that is about awakening, waking up. And that's different than growing up. That has to do with just developing our emotional and spiritual maturity, moving beyond our yesterday self. Waking up is creating a sense of what this journey is really all about and reordering our attention and awareness rather than from the outside in, from the inside out. You see, it's up to us to reorder how we're organizing our attention and awareness because the world orders our attention and awareness in the context of this is what's missing, this is what you need, this is what you should have in order to feel okay. But that's not, those things are the effects of being aligned with who and what we've come here to be. We don't have to struggle to be in the effort to acquire those things. Those are the effect of us being in alignment with a greater principle that moves us into co-creative relationship in life as opposed to just creating out of our limited self. So we have to reconcile certain impairments associated with our being born into an imperfect caregiving environment. In other words, all of us were born into an environment that didn't give us the message that we were sent by God to be unto it the Christ. Because Mary and Joseph weren't our parents. We didn't get that message. So consequently, we fell asleep to our own divine nature. And so brain science tells us that most of our behavior, 95% of our behavior is unconscious. It's reflexive. And the 5% of us that is kind of aware that something's going on is kind of taken on a journey and complaining all the way. And every effort that we put towards trying to make a difference, you know, is eclipsed by the unconscious habits of our nature, of just the way we do ourselves. And so we can pray all we want, but have our habits of being just negate all that stuff that we ask God to do for us. You know, so we can have all the things that we think that we need that gives us a sense of well-being, but yet only to have that eclipsed by the unconscious beliefs that we're not okay, that there's something wrong with us, that we're not enough. So we have to do stuff that actually affects what is in the way of our awakening to this dimension of ourself that is a greater reality than the effects of life, the outer effects of life. So for instance, what I mean by becoming conscious is for instance, how many of you are dealing with a sense of lack in your life, just scarcity? So that's okay. I'm raising my hand too because I deal with the same thing. So here's what the science tells us. The science tells us that if you become conscious of how you spend your money, because typically our habits of spending are unconscious, if you simply become conscious of how you spend your money. In other words, if you track, that's what I mean by becoming conscious. If you track what you spend, you'll have a 20% increase. Imagine what you have to do to get a job that gives you a 20% increase, when you can do it for free just simply by tracking what you spend. And just by becoming conscious of what you're noticing, how you are living the habit of your expending the energy of your money, you will see, oh, why am I doing this? And that bit of awakening frees you from that portion of your unconscious habit of spending. And how many of us eat unconsciously? And how many of us would want to kind of release some excessive baggage in that department? Well, once again, research has told us all we have to do is become conscious of what we eat. And what I mean by that is track it. You have to track it. And studies have shown if you just track what you eat, guess what? You lose 20% of your body weight just by tracking it. You don't have to even stop eating what you're eating. You just have to become conscious of what it is you're doing. So this is what I mean by becoming conscious. Just awakening to your habits of being, because they run you unconsciously. And when we're unconscious, then we become a law unto ourselves. Okay, in other words, we self-inflict ourselves with the discomfort that we're trying to resolve by having our life be different. And we can't do it that way. We have to do it a different way. So waking up, you know, bless you. This idea of waking up is important because it places us in a conscious relationship with what we're having so that we can create different choice points that move us out of our habits of being. Can you see the importance of that? To be able to be aware that this is my habit of being, but also to be aware that when I'm awake, that creates an opportunity for me to choose differently in the context of what I'm trying to move towards as awakening my awareness to the dimension of myself that is a power over my external conditions and circumstances. So we can commonly think of, I'm talking about waking up in the dimension of becoming conscious. Now I'm wanting to talk about waking up in the context of a kind of what happens when we kind of, you know, after we've been in bed for a while, we wake up from a sleep. And so that's another way of looking at this dynamic of awakening, because what are we asleep to? That until we awaken, that we are living separate and apart from our wholeness and worth. And so it could be said that our sleep state, our being asleep and therefore our need to wake up, is that we're asleep to the dimension of ourself that is infinite and eternal. We're asleep to the dimension of ourself that is God-made. We're asleep to ourself that is divine, that is here, that is the one, that is sent by God. But those are all concepts and things that kind of live as principles, as theory. But more important, we're asleep to really owning and loving ourselves, the person that lives in us as the truth of us. We are separate from that place in us that knows our worth, that knows our value, that knows why God has sent us into this world. We're separate from knowing that. It is said that the two most important days of our life is the day that we're born and the day that we figure out why we're born. And when we understand that we live separate and apart from a dimension of ourselves that is here, that is sent by God, that is empowered, that possesses every capacity needed to accomplish the job of being unto our life, the one, the avenue through which we make what we have an opportunity to express something that gives birth and expression to something that is essential that moves us forward. Until we come into ownership of that, we're leaving a part of ourself out of the equation. And so awakening means essentially recovering from the story of separation, recovering from the unintended consequences of living as if we're separate and apart from the one life that is seeking to empower us to be in this world, in our specific life, in the conditions that we have, because we're bigger than those things. And so I have shared in the past this description of the circuitry of our self system. In other words, the dynamic that we create our own personal reality through the thoughts that we think, the beliefs that we have, and our habits of being, that we recognize this as a fundamental principle in unity. But what we have yet to really understand and unpack is a clear understanding of the body-mind circuitry of this dynamic of ourself that creates our personal reality. So we have yet to understand how our habits of being, our habits of doing, our habits of having, our habits of feeling, our habits of believing, our habits of perceiving, and we have yet to understand the circuitry, the body-mind circuitry that is a part of these mechanisms that create our personal reality, and the unintended consequences of living as if that mechanism is who we are, as opposed to that is the mechanism that we have that creates our reality. So what I'm wanting to make clear is that I'm wanting us to begin, and I'm wondering if we have the ability to differentiate who we really are in this greater awareness of our awakened, intentional self that is here to make a difference from the veil that eclipses that is our reactive self that lives in the belief that we're separate and apart. Can we not see that there is a circuitry, there is a mechanism that keeps us engaged in a dimension of our experience that is not the truth of us, but is our conditioned reality, our conditioned sense of self? And that when we extricate, when we understand that that's not who we are, but that's what we have, and that what we have tends to use us when we're not conscious, when we're not tracking our life, then we understand that if we are to kind of have a power that creates, independent of being tethered to our limiting beliefs, our separate self, we have to create a spiritual practice that reconditions this circuitry, this very circuitry, to create a different personal reality. And so if this circuitry right now creates, by virtue of it just being a redundant system that is self-contained, that perpetuates itself. I mean, think about this. I had this experience earlier this week that started this whole conversation. Jane and I, we talk every morning about what's bubbling up with respect to these principles. And I was aware as I woke up in the morning, I fell asleep really in a great mood, and I woke up really feeling awful. Have you ever woke up in the morning without any reason, kind of feeling like not right? And so as I was feeling icky, I made the mistake of opening my email, and you know, and then looking at Facebook, and then you know how it goes. We kind of begin our day, and then the first thing that happens that sets us kind of off is that we become aware of some kind of discomfort. And then our feeling of discomfort kind of explores, well, what should we be uncomfortable about? What should I concern myself with today? You know, and so we begin to create for ourselves this environment in which we now have to realize that it becomes an effect of living in a self system that is replicating the thoughts that we think create feelings, and the feelings that we have create thoughts. And so we live in this system that replicates our felt experience as if that's the truth of us, and we believe it. And so as we look at the unintended consequences of living as if this self system is the truth of us, we take on habits. And so these three habits I've mentioned before, I'm wanting to speak more specifically to them and give you a practice. So as you can see, when we're living in the system, believing that we are our thoughts or our beliefs or our things or our story, then we do find ourselves perpetuating certain life conditions that mirror back to us how crummy our life is. And so when we live in the habit of scarcity or not enough, we create more not enough in our life. So have you ever had the experience of living in the habit of scarcity? Okay, and so one of the ways in which you can begin to step out of that and recognize that you're being run by your self system, and that's not the truth of you, is that you recognize the moment that you're in the discomfort of not enough, you go to you say to yourself, oh, I'm experiencing not enough right now. You're tracking what you're believing about what you're having. That's the first step of becoming conscious, is you have to track it, to be aware of it. And the moment that you understand that you are living your life through a belief, then you can be in the question, well, what's the truth? I mean, not enough is not the truth. I understand what I'm having is insufficient, but I've made what I've had insufficient because of my belief. So I'm still dealing with not enough out here, but you see, my focus is working with it inside now, is how I'm trying to get you to see how this stuff works. And so now I'm still dealing with whatever has triggered this not enough, but now I'm looking at, okay, what's the truth? The truth is that this is a belief that I took on. I don't have to have this belief. I can feel a sense of gratitude and connection to what right now is supporting me, and I can know that all of my needs are being taken care of. And so I begin to free myself of my entanglements to whatever is connected to this sense of not enough. And while that's not going to change what I'm having, it changes me, you see. And it doesn't, you just can't try it once and think, oh, I tried it, didn't work very well. It's like taking vitamins. Oh, I tried a vitamin once. No, you have to have a practice out of redoing this until eventually all of a sudden you recognize that your sense of not enough is simply a belief. You don't have to function with that as being the defining factor in your life. The next two are quicker, and they'll be a little bit easier to kind of get with. And that is the whole idea of judgment or otherizing. The tendency is that we compare ourselves with others, and we project our discomfort onto others. And as Jane is fond of quoting Richard Rohr, pain that's not transformed is pain transmitted. Well, the same thing. The point is that we're continually... Thank you for agreeing with me. The point is that... the point... See, we never hear an argument from each other. The point is that when we are otherizing, and when we're somehow caught up in the dynamic of holding ourselves up to some standard, either by diminishing ourselves or diminishing someone else, that this is an effect of the system, the self system that runs us. We're conditioned to differentiate ourselves from each other so that we can feel better about ourselves or not, depending upon what emotion we're addicted to. If we're addicted to feeling less than that's how we'll run that circuitry. But when we recognize that our judgment is really about us, then we begin to kind of look more about what's missing for us when we're judging somebody. And when we recognize that someone judging us is not about us, but it's really about what's missing for them, we can begin to understand there's a whole different dynamic going on that we need to be starting to pay attention to. Because if the judgment is not about me, but it's about how I'm being in the moment, that's something else, you see. And so here's a way of dismantling judgment in your life. Just simply know this: except for the grace of God, there go I. Pew. Just hold that as a practice. Whenever you feel a sense of displacement in your relationship to what you're experiencing and what you're having, And it feels like, you know, this is something happening that's something you're judging, just know that if you had that mind, that belief system, that would be your way. So there's no one in this world that is served by our otherizing. Everyone is served by our welcoming a sense that except for the grace of God, here I am. And that's not a bad thing to want to own, because it makes us all understand the common struggle and the humanity that really serves us when we understand that we cannot do unto someone else what we don't do unto ourselves. And then finally, the last thing that I'll mention is that this whole idea of struggle, I mean, all of these three things Jane and I have been working on. And so when we speak about these things, not only are we working on them now, but we've been working on them for a while. And we're wanting to speak from, well, this is how our effort is right now with respect to our struggle with these things. And so for me, I'm discovering that there is, as we are told, a place where we can be where there is no struggle, but life comes to us. In the ancient Chinese teaching of the Tao Te Ching, it is said that the Tao does nothing, but everything that is needed gets done in the Tao. So there is this place where we can be in our life that everything comes to us. Wouldn't you like to find that place where the effort is not trying to coax something, but rather to welcome it, and just to be welcoming what's happening and what can come to us that is in perfect alignment with not only just awakening us, because that's a part of it. We have to welcome the stuff that kind of is uncomfortable at first, but is necessary because it awakens us to what is really needing to be transformed, but also welcoming it because it's a natural extension of our purpose and passion. And when we understand that there's nothing in the way of that except our own limiting beliefs, the moment that we begin to free ourselves from those limiting beliefs, then we can begin to allow the ease and grace to flow into our life. And so here's a way to begin to open that capacity. Commonly, when we're in the dynamic of struggle, we are dealing with it's not happening now. Anybody struggle in the context of what's not happening? And so typically what's required, especially because struggle is if we're in struggle, we are basically dealing with time. We're trying to move matter in time. We're trying to move into this realm that is very hard to coax into different forms and shapes. And so in order for us to be able to manage time and basically what could be described as impatience and the whole dimension of time itself, we have to shift into a different relationship with these two elements, patience and time, in order to eliminate struggle in our life. And so here's the two things that I'm working with, Jane and I are working with. And so we're trying to work out of this effort to try to be patient. Instead, we're working with being present. Feel the difference? Because when we have that sense that something's not happening, what we really need to do is be present, right? And train ourselves to be present, because that's what's missing. And then the second thing is dealing with time, you know, the sense of not enough time, or the sense that we don't have it, or it's going to take time. And move into timing. To know that there's divine timing, that things happen when they're supposed to happen, and when we want that more than we want something to happen to resolve our discomfort, something else begins to occur in the way our life works. The moment that we begin to surrender and begin to welcome this dimension of ourself that is capable of functioning independent of the obstacles, the limitations of our external environment, that we can become able to work with any situation independent of time or circumstance or feeling, this is the kind of empowerment that we need to begin to activate that dimension of ourself that can begin to move us beyond our self-imposed limitations. So finally, the last thing I'm going to say about this is, I think I have a slide. You know, Buddha, when he was asked after his enlightenment, you know, he said, they asked, who are you? You know, he said, well, I'm awake. You know, and so being awake, you know, is a state. It's a state of being. It has nothing to do with what you have, but But it's easy for us to lose that state and fall back to sheep. Okay. So the last thing I have here is that we have to make sure that we don't sleep through our awakening. On sale now in your bookstore. God bless you all.
Okay. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names.